Richard, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us here on The Daily. Now, a common cry is that real music and innovation has been lost in our technologically saturated world. But you've argued that's not necessarily the case. Would you mind unpacking that one for us a little bit?
Yes, okay. Depends what you mean by real music, but music has been doing very well since I think sound was invented millennia ago. And music has always been dependent on technology, be it whether it's an instrument or using reverb in a church from, 600 years ago, or using, the revolution of MIDI from, in the early 80s, or the Fairlight computer. I mean, it's always incredibly, inextricably combined with technology. And that also includes the distribution process. So it's really, that's the state of music. And I don't think there's such a thing as music dying, or even now what we're looking at is actually a change of distribution. And it's not much different to what happened, these arguments with the radio, when radio came on the scene in the 1930s, and all of a sudden record companies started saying, oh, it's the end of, it's the end of music. People aren't going to buy music because they can listen to it on radio.
Mm.
Now, that probably sounds very similar to streaming, doesn't it?
Mm.
But no, I don't think it really affected it in any way. So really it's just about how people want to reach their audiences through the various processes. And probably the most exciting thing that's happening. Now, I'm not being naively optimistic. There are problems, but that's not to do with the making of music. I think the really interesting thing is how people are accessing music now, and that's where the problems start in terms of copyright. But if you sort of look at statistics, the more digital sales there are, the more there are live music performances.
Mm.
So it's not dying. In fact, if anything, there's a funny relationship between the more you actually want something, that you actually buy something or use something digitally, the more you need to see a physical version of it, which means consummate it through a performance in some way like that.
Of course, when it comes to some of the growth rate and some of the payments that we see going out there, you see enormous payments being doled out to some of the bigger end of town in terms of the artists.
Yes.
And for a lot of lower end artists that haven't quite made their nut just yet, they obviously may struggle a little bit. But have we seen some of the sort of social media, the rise of social media, make some sort of impact for some unknown artists, as it were?
Well, there are. I mean, I think you're alluding to really the big debate between the majors and the minors, so to speak, or between the four major record companies, which Sony, Universal, Warner's, and there's one more, Capitol, I think. They're the major ones who have had the market share for decades and decades, because it was based on the older distribution model where they owned the whole system, even right down to sort of lobbying record radio and trying to get playtime and stuff like that. But that is still there. That is a problem, because they have the catalogs and they have the big infrastructure and the money to invest into artists. But what's interesting is the rise of the independent label. And a report was done last year looking at the independent label, and that means any label from world music to, to grunge culture, to jazz, to blues, to anything, is that that's on the rise. And they actually have around 39% of the market share. But what's really interesting is that these independent labels, for distribution, a bit of statistics here, 72% use an international distributor, which is something like, CD Baby or something like that. And 52% use the big labels. So what's interesting is that they're using more of the international distributors than the big labels. So I think we're in a time of interesting change, and it's hard to say where it's going to go, but the main thing is legislation, and that's where the problems start with every time you play something on YouTube. the person who gets the royalty back might only get 0.001 of a dollar, which is 0.1 cent.
Well, obviously here at 2SER, we do like our independent artists and our independent labels. I'd just like to sort of, that line that you drew before about the radio industry and fears around when radio was originally invented, it would be the death of music in itself. And we're seeing the same thing with streaming services. Now
we saw it with cassettes too, remember?
Yeah, we've seen it with
cassettes. And video.
They would record them and all these kind of things, and that would mean the death of music. Well, drawing a line between these kind of things, and you've mentioned previously.
The thing is, we shouldn't confuse music with distribution of music. Mm. And I think people are getting really confused and being very emotional about certain things. I mean, if you want to make a living out of music, you're basically being a small business person.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as hard doing that as what you're going to be a hairdresser or open a coffee shop in a place where there's 20,000 coffee shops. I mean, you have to know the market, you have to know what your value is, and you have to know who wants to buy that and think about how you distribute that.
Mm. So you mentioned previously, though, with this distribution and with the advent of radio, that it took a good 15 years for it to sort of catch up with the rights, with the fairness for artists and the people that were actually playing them, so they could be able to be paid for what they were producing.
Yeah.
Do we have a similar situation with streaming now, where legislation does need to catch up and might take a while to catch up as well?
Well, yes, there is. In August this year, the European Union has put forward a proposal to deal with what you're talking about, which is, like YouTube might have you might have something on YouTube played over a million hits, but you might only get back out of that maybe $1,000 at the very most. So that's called the value gap. And the European Union has actually proposed legislation to address that in two ways. But probably the most important one is royalties coming back to the owners who own the copyright and also the people who are the creators. So that's a proposal. It's going to take a while, but at least it's starting to be addressed. And that's why it's very similar to what's going on with the radio issue years ago. Legislation is going to be always slow, and one of the problems with that is because the technological platforms are always changing so quickly, they just can't keep up. But it is starting to happen, and I would be naive to think it's going to solve everything. But there is something else in the article. We talk about this interesting new bit of technology called blockchain. And that could be an interesting solution in the future. At the moment, it's not there because it's very primitive. Global banks are using it. Bitcoin works on that. And what it does is actually a digital currency based on, and it records every transaction. So, but it's very cumbersome at the moment. Hopefully, maybe in 5 to 10 years' time, once global banks work out a way to make it deal with stock market transactions really quickly, we might see that actually embedded in all audio files such that it goes straight to the royalty collection agencies.
Mm. Fabulous. Well, Richard, thank you very much. Do appreciate you joining us, having a bit of a chat with us about this one.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed that. Okay.
Excellent.
All right. Bye-bye.
That was Professor Richard Vella, Professor of Music in the School of Creative Arts at the Newcastle University Conservatorium, there we go, got it this time, discussing the adaption of the music industry to some of the new technological developments that are currently in place. Still some catching up to do, but obviously a very important one for us here at 2SER.